episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. And oh yeah, I don't know. I had to catch my breath there. I got so excited. We're starting a show. Is I gonna have a fucking orgasm or something?
We're back on the air.
Or I'm just old and holding my hemorrhoids in, you know.
Like, that. Yeah, one of the two.
How are you? How are you, Matt?
Good. Yeah, you know, the weekend's here. Comic Palooza's getting closer. They just announced that they're having Rebecca Romijn over there, and that's pretty damn cool. I don't think she's ever been at Comic Palooza.
Yeah, it's cool since she's on the current Star Trek Strange New Worlds. You know, I'm still not like, I mean, John Cena's cool, but other than that, the guest list, I don't know, man. I can't, since I work with the con, I can't say too much, but I just feel like the old days were better. And we'll see. I'm really hoping they announce some more comic book people too.
That's one thing I haven't seen a whole lot of comic book artists.
Yeah, I'm sure they're coming. You know,
voice actors.
I feel like them one light. Day to have Todd McFarlane there. That would be incredible.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Todd?
Yeah.
Do they have enough for him left after spending money on John Cena, though?
Right. No, I know. Or, I mean, I'd be happy with him just calling up to Dallas and seeing what James Ibar is doing with the new Crow movie coming out. Hey, man, you want to come down to the con, talk to your fans?
Yeah.
He was great when he was there before, man. His panel was awesome. He was real nice to talk to. You know, it'd be cool, something like that. You know, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I'll be excited to go, you know, when we get there. And we'll see how it all plays out as we get a little closer.
Yeah, the wife already wants a photo op with the Charmed Ones because that's her. She's seen that whole series like 10 times.
Like, man, I just can't pay the ridiculous prices they're asking for all these autographs and photos. It's getting more and more every year.
Yeah. I told her, I was like, are you sure you want one? Because I guarantee you it's like
they're getting a fucking blowjob out of or something. I mean, I mean, shit. That's worth at least the $80 it might cost you or whatever.
Uh-huh. But I have a friend that he loves John Cena, he's a big wrestling fan. And he's like he was trying to see if I could get him discounted passes, and I was like, just volunteer, man. You know, just volunteer, get your passed right that way. But he ended up buying a John Cena speed pass, and I was like, hey man, you know you can split those photo ops, just let me know if you want to split it. And he's like, oh hell yeah. And I was like, he didn't say anything after that, so I don't know if he's still cool about splitting it.
Even
and
split it to $100.
I may do it to split, you know. 100 is the most I've ever spent. I've spent 100 on Erin Moriarty because I like her as Starlight and the Boys, and I'm glad I got a photo op with her before the plastic surgery, because she looked a little weird after that plastic surgery. But there are always there's always avenues to spend your money over at Comic Palooza. And we'll see if Houston Toy Museum, if he's there, I may donate that. I've got some Ninja Turtles slide like artwork from the original cartoon, I may donate that for the Ninja Turtle display that he's got, and give it to him there.
He'll be there. He said he'll have a booth, so
yeah,
I'm sure he'll be there. But yeah, man, it'll be fun. So you know, but until then, there's a lot going on. We got to finish up Monsters Month here this week and next, and we've got a new Planet of the Apes movie in a couple weeks. It looks really badass. And, you know, and so lots to look forward to before Memorial Day weekend, you know. And we'll get there, man. And in case you need to keep up with what's going on, Comic Palooza and our podcast, remember we're at the Rebel Radio Podcast.com for all your awesome Rebel Radio needs, because, I don't know, we think we're pretty awesome most days.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Most of the time.
Yeah,
we're at least 80% awesome, at least, you know, kind of like that nicer ground beef you get at the store, you know, the 80-20, you know.
The Angus beef
of podcasting. Yes, the Angus beef of podcasting.
Might be the weirdest thing we've ever compared ourselves to. But, you know, I mean, sure, whatever works.
Yeah, but, man.
Man, there's CinemaCon was going on this week, and there's been a lot of some news came out and stuff. Then, I don't know, man. Do you think a Transformers G.I. Joe live action crossover is a great idea? It's like,
it seems crazy.
I mean, the Transformers movies have been hit or miss, obviously. Unfortunately, a little more miss, I would think, than hit. But I also have never judged them too harshly because, you know, they're about giant robots from another planet. And, you know, it's kind of, I think, a bit difficult to adapt to live action. You know, and same with G.I. Joe. These are otherworldly military soldier heroes that are little, I think, difficult to truly adapt the way it should be, even though the second film, Retaliation, did a little better than the first film. Mm-hmm. It just feels like a crossover could turn into quite a messy extravaganza of nonsense. But maybe that's what Transformers G.I. Joe crossover should be, just a big, long action film that doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, you know, I know Hasbro, everybody wants to do their movie universe now. We've got, you know, of course, the Star Wars universe. We've got Star Trek. We've got the MCU, the new DCU coming out next year, the MonsterVerse, and, you know, Universal tried to pull off the Dark Universe a few years ago with the Tom Cruise Mummy movie that did not work. And so Hasbro wants their piece of the pie at Paramount with it. Hasbro universe. Surely Margot Robbie's Monopoly movie is not going to tie into that, because that would be very strange.
Yeah, that would be weird.
Which I still tried to figure out. I saw that, like, wait, okay, the Barbie movie, sure, but a Monopoly movie, like, what? It's like, I just can't even.
Next summer, I mean, 2025. I'll watch
Margot do anything.
Scrabble.
I mean, Margot could stand there and read a poem to me all day and I'd be fine, but I'm trying to figure out Monopoly.
Yeah.
Movie. You know, it's like, but anyway, so yeah. And then what a Transformers G.I. Joe movie crossed over Monopoly, sure. Then crossed over with some other game they make. You know, I don't know.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Candyland.
We're sorry we made this. Yes, so we'll see. Transformers and G.I. Joe, how it turns out. One thing, this is kind of a weird timing. I'm actually reading this book right now. They announced Paramount, we all know they're making a sequel to Mutant Mayhem, the Ninja Turtles movie from last year that's successful. And it's due out in April of 2026. It's still a couple years away. You know, it takes a long time to animate that stuff. But they announced they're adapting The Last Ronin, Ninja Turtles, into a live-action R-rated film. Okay, now I haven't finished the book yet. I'm about halfway through it. I've been kind of taking my time with it. And it's fantastic. I mean, it's one of the best written Ninja Turtles comics in years. For those that don't know, it's basically...
It's Michelangelo, right?
Yeah, in a somewhat dystopian New York where the city is falling apart. It's been taken over by the heir of Shredder. You know, he basically rules the city. And Michelangelo is the last surviving Turtles. And he goes out in a quest for revenge for the deaths of his brothers and Master Splinter. And it's remarkably well written and sad. Definitely not for kids, but I haven't felt reading the book like why it needs to be rated R. The book stays pretty PG-13-ish so far anyway. Maybe I haven't gotten to the good stuff.
Okay.
Because my thinking on this is I'm all for it. I think it's a cool idea. But it's like, is there an audience for R-rated Ninja Turtles film? Because Ninja Turtles is one of those generational things that, you know, we grew up watching. And now we've passed it on to our children and they watch it. And all of a sudden, you alienate those children by making an R-rated film that only appeals to us. So is this a movie that's going to make, like, you know, whether you like the Michael Bay-produced Ninja Turtles films or not, they made a lot of money because they appealed to families. Yeah. Now, all of a sudden, you might cut that money in half by doing a R-rated film. So it's interesting that they're going to choose to go that route. And I wouldn't be surprised at all by the time this film gets made that they tone it down to a darker PG-13.
Maybe so. But I think, you know, you're always going to have those parents like me that grew up with Secret of the Ooze and then backtrack to the original Ninja Turtles film live action. I think if you get those original suits, maybe a little more updated, but those same type of suits in that style, and you bring that nostalgia back, I think there are going to be some 13-year-olds and 12-year-olds that get dragged to that theater to see this film.
Yeah, but I don't think you're going to do that. If they're going to do it, they're going to do heavy duty. They're going to CGI, you know.
Probably.
That's just the age. They're not going to bring back Jim Henson suits. Come on now, Matt.
That'd be freaking awesome, though. I would love to see it.
Nah, everything. I mean, when you have special effects of the caliber of Dune and the Planet of the Apes films and stuff, you know, there's no reason you can't make a realistic looking Michelangelo on screen now, you know, even better than the live action films from a few years ago. You know, I mean, and those weren't really bad CGI. It was just the character designs were a little frightening with the slimy turtles and all that.
Yeah, they made him actually look like, you know, rugged reptilian characters.
Yeah.
Which is probably what they look like in real life, you know.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, the what's her name? Megan Fox in the Schoolgirl outfit was fine. I like whatever costume designer came up with that idea was great. But the CGI,
they were doing their job. That's what they're doing.
Give them a raise.
Yeah.
Sure. And you know, I'm gonna backtrack just a bit. It looks like we might be getting our first trailer sometime this week for the Transformers 1 animated film, which is good news.
Really?
Because rumor is this week that it's a prequel. Some people say it's a prequel to the live action film. Some people say it's just a prequel to the series, and it comes out in September. And we did get a trailer this week, and I'm not going to say much about this for Joker Folie à Deux, whatever the fuck its title is. And I can pretty much say I pretty much have zero interest in this. I saw the first film, and I'm a huge Batman fan. You know, everyone knows that, but I just didn't care for that Joker movie. Like, I can appreciate Joaquin's performance; he was very good in it. But it's just a little too dark, a little too timeline contusions, messing with the Batman timeline, things like that. And I didn't like And I don't know, me as the Joker to me plays better as a just manic, chaotic villain. I don't need to know his backstory. I have no desire to know it. That's why I like what Nolan did in The Dark Knight, where you might've gotten glimpses of his backstory, but Nolan realized that he's infinite chaos. You don't really need to know why he just exists to cause problems. And I like that version of the Joker better. But teach your own. I know a lot of people really like the Joker movie. I just didn't. And I have no desire to see the sequel.
That was funny that the whole time, everyone thought that there was actually some chick that was attracted to Joaquin Phoenix's character. And then he just made her up. And then, all the memes that had followed after that, just like, y'all really thought he could pull this chick? So how messed up the guy was.
So is that going to happen again? Harley's all in his mind.
I wonder.
Yeah.
Or is he in Harley's mind?
If anything gave me any interest in it, it would be to see how Lady Gaga pulls off the performance.
Yeah.
Because I mean, to her credit, she's very good at acting and what she does, you know, that would be it. I'm not a big fan of the idea that's a musical. That seems just really weird.
That is weird,
but it's the choice they made as filmmakers. So, you know, if people want to go see it, then let them go see it. Last little bit of news, man. We got our first gameplay trailer for this open world Star Wars game called Star Wars Outlaws, coming out on August 30th to all the next gen systems. It's Ubisoft, so a lot of hardcore gamers are Ubisoft, I guess, doesn't have a great history of open world games, but the trailer's fantastic. That's all I know. It's like, it looks like you live and breathe in the Star Wars world and you play some sort of bounty hunter type smuggler character, and it looks cool, you know. So I guess it's one of those games you have to kind of wait and see what reviews are like and how Ubisoft pulls it out.
It would be even cooler. It's like they're already, you know, trying to smuggle for Jabba the Hutt. Why wouldn't you just make a Han Solo game? I mean, that's a no-brainer moneymaker right there. You're Han Solo, and you're going around smuggling in the Millennium Falcon with Chewie.
Interesting that in the history of Star Wars video games, it's funny you mentioned that, because like you have the Battlefront games and you had Shadow of the Empire and stuff, but there's not, but all these Star Wars games, they never like to use the original trilogy characters. It's always like Cal Kestis or Starkiller or, you know, or the, whoever you are in this Outlaws game. It's like,
yeah,
why have they never made a really great Star Wars adventure game with the original characters? You know, and I've often wondered that too, you know?
Yeah. Cause to me, I'm like, dude, that would make so much money. Who doesn't want to be Han Solo?
Yeah. If you're a kid at home, you want to be Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, or if you're a little girl, you want to be Princess Leia.
Hell yeah. And then they made the, they animated the chick to where she's all like rigid in the face. She looks like, that comedian Theo doesn't even look like a chick. Looks like a dude. So I don't know if they're, I don't know the last Ubisoft game I've played, but,
yeah, they did the Assassin's Creed games, I believe, you know.
Okay. I think I got one of those games on sale and I played it for a little bit.
But. Yeah, they're okay. They become a bit repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know. We'll see. So we'll see how it turns out when he comes out in August. But other than that, man, let's get into some things we watched this week. Man, I did. I think the biggest thing I watched this week was tuning into WrestleMania 40, which was, you know, we don't talk a lot of wrestling on the show over the years, but I've gotten back into it this year. And it was a fantastic WrestleMania, one of the best I've seen. Cody Rhodes, son of Dusty Rhodes, is now the WWE champion by pulling off his victory and finishing his story. And that was quite exciting. There was a lot of, I admit there was a lot of emotion going on in our house because everybody in the house is Cody Rhodes fans. Mm-hmm. Even Little Waverly was getting into it, watching it. And so we were all cheering. And you know, you know, wrestling is entertainment and it's staged to an extent. To be fair, but man, when that moment happened on this WrestleMania 40 and Cody won, you couldn't help but get excited about it. You know, it was just like, that's how well they played the drama up. And the WWE, you know, it's being run by a Triple H now, Paul Levesque. He's in charge of the company. And for anyone that's been on the fence about coming back to wrestling, now's the time. It is as good as it's been in 20 years. And even I will admit that Paul Levesque, Triple H, he is bringing it back to what the golden days were.
They had The Rock, they had Undertaker, they had Cena, and
it was almost like a passing of the torch from the old legends to new legends. I mean, Cena came out and Undertaker came out Stone to help Cold. Cody finish his story. Stone Cold did not appear.
But
some of the old timers came out to finish help Cody finish his story, and it was almost like a passing of torch. And then, you know, and so it's really good stuff. They have a lot of good young talent. And, you know, Logan Paul, the YouTuber and creator of Prime, you know, he's a wrestler, and props to him, man. He's great. He's really good in the ring, good personality. People are like, oh, this guy makes Prime and YouTube. And it's like, nah, this dude is good, man. He's legit. You know, and so it's a really good time to get back in wrestling for anybody that misses it. And man, you know, if you have Peacock for $6 a month, man, you get to watch all the PLEs are there every month. And you still have to tune into Hulu or for your Raw and SmackDown because, you know, they show up on there the day after they air. But everything else is on Peacock. Tons of great documentaries on there about wrestling and stuff. So it's really cool. But other than that, man, I haven't gotten caught up on the Bad Batch yet, but I'm caught up on X-Men 97. And, man, that last episode, I was stunned, silent, watching that episode. Are you all caught up?
I am not.
Oh man, dude.
So yeah,
I can't say too much then. Oh, man, what are you doing, slacker? It only takes 20
you can
minutes
say to watch an episode. You can. I heard they brought back. Dooku's apprentice. I can't think of her name.
I'm talking X-Men 97.
Oh, 97. Yeah. I thought you said Bad Batch for some reason.
Did you just zone out of the show, man?
I thought I heard Bad Batch.
Stop watching porn on your phone over there. No, I said I'm not caught up on Bad Batch.
Oh, you're not caught. Okay. But yes, no. I did watch X-Men 97. Wow. Fucking man, crazy.
This latest episode is like a gut punch. I mean, there's no way to describe it. People think that cartoons cannot tell adult storytelling or have another thing coming. Because this thing, it comes and it hits you. And I'm going to say this without spoiling too much, but it's plays like an allegory to 9/11. And that's just one allegory. It can be in 9/11, it can be to
Pearl Harbor
genocides. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the downside of one people. I mean, World War II. One people mm-hmm. believing that a certain race of people is not, you know, don't deserve to be on this earth. You know, and it was incredible storytelling. I sat there. I mean, I literally was stunned silent when it was over. I couldn't believe a cartoon could tell a story that well done. And it was it's only 10 episodes. We have 5 more to go, but man, the first 5 have been great. You know, and what else are they going to pull off? I think they're alluding to a little bit of time travel with Cable, since Cable makes an appearance.
Yes.
He was trying to stop the event that happens. But, you know, I hope they don't reverse it through time travel, because then I think it takes away from the impact and the importance of that episode. But at the same time, if they were to reverse what happened through time travel, you feel like these writers who have obviously shown that they get this show so smartly that they'll do it in the right way, you know, that it won't cheapen the effect of the events of that episode if they do do it through that way. But man, what a fucking episode of television. You know, every now and then you'll see an episode of television, like the Ozymandias episode of Breaking Bad, for example, or that episode of the X-Men 97 that just is just that kind of powerful television, you know. And it's amazing that this came from a cartoon for Marvel Animation, who's basically a relatively brand new studio that Marvel's kicking off, and hopefully more cartoons in the future. And it was amazing.
Yeah, no, it's still well animated, and the subtle comedy is good. The undertones, some of the dramatic stuff that's in there is done well. They're still able to keep it fun, and you know, still able to wow you with the story. So yeah, I mean, if you haven't been watching, get caught up. I'd probably say the episode last week was a weaker episode, but
it was fun though, with the nod to the old X-Men video games.
Yeah.
And then the Stormforge episode is actually adapted straight from a comic book.
Really?
So there's a lot of comic book nods in the show. Okay. I thought the nod to the Konami video game was really cool. I still enjoyed it for that. It was the weakest of the 5 episodes so far, mm-hmm. but it still was fun, you know? And when I say weakest, it was only by a little bit, just because it moves Storm story forward, but it didn't do anything for Jubilee story.
Yeah, not really.
But
she learned a new tactic. She's like spinning, turning her sparks into like a spinning blade, like Xena, you know?
Yeah. Well, even this last episode had some great nods. I mean, Dazzler appears in there.
Of course,
we get to see Nightcrawler. So many cool nods to the old X-Men comics and things. And then, lots of comic references throughout, and there's already places online where you can go look and see all the different comics that they've adapted or representing in these books or alluding to. So a lot of really cool stuff. I'm looking forward to the next 5 episodes and seeing how this show plays out. It's been a lot of fun so far, and they haven't officially announced season 2 yet, but it's seems in all likelihood that it's coming. So I hope they are able to continue this on, you know. Yeah, that's really all I've watched this week. I'm in WrestleMania and playing some Spider-Man 2. And now that it's on Paramount Plus, by next week, I'm going to sit down and watch the Bob Marley film for sure. I wanted to see it. And just wasn't one of those movies I had to go see in theaters, but I definitely wanted to see it. So I'm going to try to watch that.
Yeah, especially if it's where is it streaming?
Hulu? It's on Paramount Plus.
Paramount. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it looks good. Speaking of, since don't tell nobody report us, but me and Matt share accounts, and I share my Paramount Plus. And your wife gets on there and doesn't use your account. She fills my account up with all these things she watches. And
Oh my God.
It doesn't really make me mad. I'm just kidding. Because I don't use Paramount Plus a whole ton unless there's a movie on there or something. But I'm like, what is Jackie watching?
That's funny.
But yeah, man, that's really just all I watched this week. Damn, a whole lot of time.
Yeah, I had time, but I binged a new game. It's a game that's been out for a little bit. And I'm just late getting to it. And that's Diablo 4. And I played Diablo 1 with my cousin on PlayStation, and that was my first Blizzard game. I think I discovered StarCraft after that, but we played Diablo for 2 days straight, basically, or a whole day straight. It was like 24 hours straight that we played it. and so that we could, you know, beat Diablo. And and then Diablo 2 came out. Of course, we had to beat Diablo 2. You have to kill Diablo again, and then beat Bale in the extended expansion pack. And then I played Diablo 3 not long ago. I was late to the game on that one too, but this one, it came up on Game Pass. So if you have a Game Pass subscription on Xbox, then you can cloud game it for free with your subscription. And they brought back one of the demons that was vanquished in Diablo 2, Anduriel, which was cool because I feel like you didn't, you know, she's just kind of there. And then here, you know, she's, you know, they make a bigger deal about her. So there's some lesser known characters that are a little, that kind of highlighted. The graphics are great. I first beat Diablo, the first Diablo, with a rogue. And so I played with a rogue on this one, and I bought the legendary appearance pack to make her look like the enhanced Diablo character, the original, with the original skin and everything. So, you know, felt nostalgic playing it. Now it was fun. It's been fun so far. I'm not sure where I am in the game, 'cause I haven't like looked at any walkthroughs or tried to see, you know, where my place in the timeline of these quests kind of puts me, but it's been fun, and I feel like I could be halfway through, but we'll see. I'll continue burning time on it. Yeah, you know, I've been doing some, not all the side quests, but some side quests. I've been showing my kids how you can just walk into a horde of demons and then use an AOE effect, and then, you know, barrel your way through and still come out the other side, and they just think that's awesome. And I was like, man, I said, I used to have the same feeling whenever I was a kid, and I watched my cousin would always play the warrior. He was the tank, and I would be the rogue. I'd do the long distance stuff, and he'd just walk into a horde of demons and come out the other side somehow. It's fun. So playing that, I also, I've never played Fallout, but the trailer looked interesting. So I decided to watch the first, four episodes of Fallout, since they, I think they released four or five. And I like it so far. So far it's interesting. I like it. And yeah, I'm going to watch some more.
Yeah, I've played some of New Vegas and some of Fallout 4, and they're not bad games. They're just, you know, they're very extensive. I like New Vegas way more than I like 4.
But, I heard New Vegas is like the best.
Yeah, and it's pretty fun. I never did finish it, but I got way into it. You know, I played quite a bit of it, and the game's real quirky, and I was talking to somebody at work. I said, man, do they capture that quirkiness well on the show? Because from the trailer, it looked a little like off. And he said, no, once you see it in context, he said the quirkiness does work. I'm like, okay, well, that's good. So I plan on getting into it. I mean, it's only been out. You had more time than you thought if you finished four episodes. It's only been out like 2 days.
Yeah.
I plan on getting into it. Just haven't yet. Because I know I'm pretty sure it's not something you can watch for the kids, because the games are pretty, pretty adult for the most part. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. It's like in the first episode, there is it doesn't show anything except the guy's butt, but there is a lovemaking scene.
Yeah. And the games are ultra violent. So I don't know if they did the ultra violence in the show too.
Oh yeah. It's like the bullets are, you know, fucking massive hollow point, you know, bullets, yeah, where they're just like making softball size holes in people.
Like, fuck you, man. You're dead. Yeah. No. It's like, well, that's all these movies now. I mean, they're just, it's like, how much, you know, maybe not all of them, but a lot of them, like, how much blood can we get on screen?
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing I appreciate about the John Wick films. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of gunshots in it, but like, you know, and Chad Zelensky, they made a point though. They said, our gunshots are going to be much more realistic. You're not going to see blood splatting all over the screen. You know, it's like, mm-hmm, you know, you drop a guy and he goes down. And a lot of the John Wick scenes are shot in the dark too. So it's not really necessary to see the guy laying them. Pull. I mean, there are some scenes, John Wick, where laying them pulls of blood, but it's not overly done. Yeah. You know? And, But that's a 21st century thing, though, to have, as you know, people explode with bullets. You know, in the 90s, it was rattle them with bullets. How many shots can they take? And they're still standing there after like 50 shots. They're like, is this guy ever going to die? Oh, no, we need 51 shots. You know?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? You know?
Oh, yeah. You know, Arnold, you know, running away from, you know, he's getting like splattered with bullets and somehow comes out the other side.
They're going to remake The Running Man with Glenn Powell.
No. What?
Yeah. Which, you know, I mean, I don't think The Running Man is such a classic. It can't be remade, but it's kind of like, I guess it could be more important in today's media age, you know, if they tell the right story. You know?
Yeah.
But it's such, you almost have to upgrade it somehow because it's such a simple, kind of not that interesting concept on the surface. It only worked because Arnold was in it, to be fair. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, so who, like, was supposed to be in it?
Hmm.
Superman.
Oh, Christopher Reeve.
Christopher Reeve. Hmm. He was going to do that film after Superman 3. And then Canon Film said, hey, got all this money and a Superman 4 script. How about it? And so, he didn't do it.
I guess if you make Running Man with a little bit fresher take on it, it could work. You know,
you could definitely tell the story better. At the beginning, you know, with the helicopter scene at the beginning, where he becomes the butcher of Bakersfield, it's like, it's kind of rushed. So maybe you could dramatize that a little bit. And then, of course, the prison scene, that's easy. You know,
they need some big wrestler to play the big old guy you fight, though.
Yeah, dude, man. So, yeah. I wonder if Jesse Ventura comes back as Captain.
That's right. I'm glad you remember the name of who the wrestler was in the first one. I knew it was a wrestler. Yeah. I just couldn't think of it.
Yep. And then Jim Brown. And then you had an actual opera singer. He's the one that died like the day after he finished filming. And then I forget the other guys, but yeah, Jim Brown and Jesse Ventura, Captain Freedom. That's I always right. remember the and, Captain Freedom's workout.
You mentioned Jim Brown, man. OJ Simpson died from cancer. Dude. I don't have much thoughts on him. I just remember, you know, everybody in Houston remembers the Rockets games. You might have been a little too young, and the famous chase as he was being chased by the police as he was wanted for questioning for the death of his wife or ex-wife and her. It was his ex-wife and her current husband, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then, of course, the famous trial on TV and all that, and whether the glove fit or not. And I'm not going to judge OJ, you know, that's for God in heaven above to judge him. What, you know, now he's going, whether he did it or not, you know, I don't know. I don't want to say I don't care because that sounds wrong because people died, but it's just like, whatever at this point, you know? But man, the Juice, man, he was, almost a Terminator.
He was.
Came very close, really.
He was a Naked Gun.
He was in the Naked Gun. You know, he, very successful running back, very successful career. He was one of the first athletes to start being in movies because he had charisma and people liked him. You know, he tested well with audiences and for the better part of his career, man, he was, a nice guy. People really liked him. He was a very popular athlete, very popular with people, signing autographs and things like that. Mm-hmm. And, even later in his career, after the trial and all that, his image was still one that people, were intrigued by and interested in. You know, he would have book signings and people would show up and they would see him and meet him. And, so he was quite a polarizing figure, I think, throughout his, football career and into his post-football career. You know, and whether he murdered people or not, cancer still sucks. You know, it sucks for anybody to have to go that way. So, you know, rest in peace to the Juice, OJ Simpson, you know?
Yeah, man, the Juice.
Yeah.
But isn't it weird that, like a lot of people connected to that case got cancer and died? Like Kardashian, Johnny Cochran, cancer. Yeah. Kardashian's daddy.
He was connected to that case.
He was his lawyer. That's how Kim was initially famous. Her dad defended OJ. But I don't know. Yeah, dude. Like that legal team, like a lot of that legal team got cancer. It was weird.
Yeah, but that could just be a coincidence. Yeah.
Imagine the world.
You can't put cancer into people. I mean, come on now.
Yeah. You know, that Lunchables do that. Not, you know, not the universe.
I mean, I don't know.
you see that report? Lunchables have lead, and I was like, damn it, I consumed so many of those as a kid.
That's probably what's wrong with you now, Matt.
I was waiting for that. I was waiting for that one.
All right, so Fallout, man, we got a little tangent there. All right, well, we're ready to get in today's feature film.
Yeah, man.
As we continue Monsters Month, or Monster Mania, whatever we decided to call it. And we go back to this film is 1953.
A year before
Godzilla came out. And this movie was not a direct inspiration for Godzilla because the makers of Godzilla already had a plan, but they saw this film and they realized, okay, we have to make Godzilla now. They went and got the funding for it after this because they saw the success of this movie. Mm-hmm. And this movie is the Beast of 20,000 Fathoms. And I need to correct myself. Last week I said the movie that inspired Ray Harryhausen actually did the special effects for this, but it's the movie that made him want to continue in the business, you know? And anytime you see a Ray Harryhausen film, you know, you're going to be wowed by his stop motion and his effect work because the dude was the fucking master, of the work that he did. And, you know, and the stuff he does in this movie, and we'll get into it more in a minute is arguably, really fucking good.
It looks good, man. Yeah. It looks good. It looks damn good.
But before that, Matt, give us a little brief summary of this film.
Yeah, man. So, of course, not a Godzilla film, so don't confuse us with Godzilla, but an atomic blast.
It's just as brutal.
Yeah. An atomic blast awakens a lizard, a big lizard, dinosaur.
Well, dinosaur, yeah.
Yeah, Rheosaurus. And you know, he goes on a rampage, sinks a boat, you know, and then, you know, people don't believe, that the two witnesses, that have seen it, even though one is a scientist, they're like, yeah, you're crazy. You just need some rest. They have him in a hospital. He goes and he finds, a corroborator of his story, because he survived the boat incident and, the monster makes its way back on land. So now everybody knows they're telling the truth. And it's a nice spectacle of effect seeing this thing bust through the town, going to Coney Island, tearing down Coney Island. And eventually they got to bring old gunslinger Lee Van Cleef to save the day with a nuclear round. It's a film that's basically it. That's probably it's an easy film to sum up. Very simple, but man, I'm telling you, it looks damn good. You can tell it's a film from 1953, but you know, it's charming. It's charming, man. The effects are nice. They're smooth, for that year. Is it stop motion? It's stop motion, right?
Yeah, stop motion.
Yeah. And, the monster looks clean. It doesn't look cheesy at all. I could definitely see why at that time, that type of animation and would look creepy, scary, intimidating. Seeing it like just tear through the buildings, it looked good. I think the only cheesy parts were maybe when it bent down to like eat people or eat things, like the shark and the squid underwater. Right. It's like, you know, you just saw this thing pass in front of the camera. It didn't actually eat the squid and the shark. They did their best to make it look good. And for the most part, it does. Whenever he bites the police officer and his legs are just hanging out, I kind of laughed. But it still holds up, man. I watched it with the wife, and the wife thought it was entertaining. And it is very hard to get her to watch a classic film, especially one that's in black and white. But she enjoyed it as well.
People.
Yeah, one of those people. But it's like, if I put it on, I start playing it, she'll watch it, and then she'll get it. She'll be like, man, you know what? This isn't that bad. Wow, I'm surprised. Well, and I'm like, yeah. It's like, it's well done. It's classic. Yeah.
Well, what I think goes back to is these old films is it's, you'll be hard-pressed to find a movie that's, I'd say, pre-1965, maybe, is fair enough to see where actors don't mail it in. Like these creature features, the old science fiction films like Forbidden Planet, things like that, where the actors believe in what they're reading on script. And yes, it's a job, but they weren't making the millions and millions in the contracts that these actors have now. So I think there's a certain charm to be had for these old films where these actors are really giving their all because they want to work again. It's the golden age of Hollywood. They're trying to entertain people. Because if I remember correctly, the contract thing didn't come along to what Clint Eastwood, when he signed with Warner Brothers to do several films in the 60s. Yeah. That was kind of the new thing. And then, you know, Gene Hackman signed a deal to do several films. And at that point, you only really had TV contracts. So, you know, these actors, you know, they believed in what they were doing. And The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms is a well-acted film. You know, as the scientist tries to sell his story to get people to believe him. The look of terror when they're in the snow caps and the dinosaurs attacking, and like, you know, it's kind of horrifying. Like you said, you're sitting in the theater in 1953, you never seen anything like this. You're like, well, this is, they had King Kong was the closest thing they had to it at this point.
Yeah.
You know, and even that was 20 years before this, you know, so it had already played. You didn't have VCRs back then to just go rent a copy of King Kong and stay in people's minds. But it was released a couple of years before this, which inspired this film to get made.
Yeah, the re-release of Kong.
And so, you know, I would love to know what it's like to be a kid or a young person or even an adult and sit in the theater for the first time and watch something like this, because we're so spoiled by the effects we have now with films like Avatar and Dune and Star Wars and these amazing special effects, which are spectacular in their own way because they take us to new places we could never go in today's films. But in 1953, this took moviegoers to a place they could never go to see a real dinosaur on screen.
Yeah.
And then a lot of it was filmed. It's weird. This film had a lot of location shooting. Parts of it were shot in Brooklyn and New York, but then the big dinosaur scene in Coney Island was actually shot in California.
Yeah. In LA. Yeah.
You know, and I think that has a lot to do with that's where the studios were, you know, I'm sure. So they could do the special effect work with the dinosaur and all that and film a lot easier. I imagine a lot of the interior shots were done in New York. I bet some of the snow scenes were probably in the New York, Brooklyn area because it snows there. I'm just guessing, you know,
maybe the underwater scene was,
or the underwater scene could have been done off the coast of New York as well. You know, and so it's interesting that the film had that much location shooting for an older movie like that. That wasn't all just done on studio lots. Because most films back then were heavy studio lot movies. There wasn't a whole lot of location shooting back in the 50s. Yeah. You know,
you're just filmed inside all the time, pretty much.
But Harryhausen's monster, though, is really well done. It's stop motion, but it has this grain, realistic effect to it. You know, we're unfortunately, the early Godzilla films, as much as they are well done too, they went for the man in the suit to get the more realistic movement. But at the same time, I kind of like the stop motion with that jerky, otherworldly look to it, because it almost gives this frightening sense to the moviegoer.
Yeah. That's that rigid movement. And that, you know, that stiff, rigid movement, I guess is probably the best way to describe it. It's something that you sometimes see in like a Raimi horror film. You know, but they just turn, you know, Raimi just turns the camera with that movement. This one doesn't, but it's, to me, it's the same effect, as those rigid, moves a ghoul or a monster, would make from a, you know, classic horror film, of Raimi's, like Evil Dead kind of stuff. And I thought it's, you know, it sold the character, of the monster, the Raiosaurus.
And it does a great job of to showcase Ray Harryhausen's effects. A lot of wide shots when the monster's attacking New York. The camera's pulled back. You see people running, so you get the scope and the scale of it. I mean, imagine being in 1953 and being a kid and seeing this on a 60-foot screen. It was probably amazing, you know? You'd be blown away by it. But it's also terrifying. Like, man, when he buries the guy alive in the snow, the dinosaur, at the beginning, he's eating people. The dinosaur himself gets basically burned alive, even though they don't show it on screen. You know what happened. So the movie's also terrifying, because when this dinosaur attacks New York City, people are running for their lives, they're screaming, they're getting stepped on, they're getting cars and buildings smashed, and you're like, holy shit, man, this dinosaur ain't fucking around.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mass panic.
Yeah. Dude. But it's a movie just like Godzilla, and it's hard not to compare the two, even though they're two completely different films in the way they play out. Is playing on people's mass hysteria and their fears in the 1950s, whether it's the nuclear fear, whether it's the communist scare, with people not wanting to believe this guy's crazy story, fear of the world changing in the 50s. So it play, you know, as times were changing, because the 50s and 60s, as we know, were very huge movements in America and Europe and across the world, you know, with civil rights and things like that. And this movie subtly plays on all that without being political and in your face, just as mm-hmm. Godzilla did in 1954, a year later. And I think that's just what good storytelling is. You know, movies have always been a product of our time. You know, we talked earlier in the episode about X-Men, the new episode of X-Men 97. That episode is a product of what could have happened in the late 90s and did happen, you know, 4 years later with 9/11, you know, from when that TV show took place. And that's how entertainment is. It's scary that movies and television can be so close to reality and play on our fears and things like that. But it's also important because the world is told through our movies, our television, our sporting events. We know where we were when certain sporting events are, and that's how the time is told. It's how we measure time as far as big events in our lives. And movies did that back then in the 50s for sure. And then, then the Western came along and science fiction came along. Science fiction, this is science fiction, but you know what I mean? And movies changed to a different era in the 60s. 1960s movies were a little more hopeful, you know, a little bit more. And then the 1970s, after the success of Star Trek, brought us movies like 2001 and Star Wars to show us where we could go. You know, so it's just interesting as the space race unfolded. Yeah, as we went to the moon to beat the Russians the moon, and as the space race unfolded. And it's just funny how Hollywood did that. In 1953, The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, it's telling you right there in your face, hey, we're all afraid, but hey, let's have fun with it and have a movie. What if a dinosaur came back to life, you know?
Yeah, for real. And a dinosaur that I want to say it's bigger than a T-Rex, I want to say.
Yeah, looks huge.
I think it's funny how whenever the dinosaur is being identified the second time by the boat survivor, mm-hmm. and they're in that other doctor's office, and he's like, "Oh, this dinosaur has been extinct for 2 million years." Oh, okay, yeah, let's go search for it. And I'm like, all right. They don't have like a tooth or a scale from this thing. Oh, yeah. They're just like, yeah, we picked out the same picture, so it's got to be it.
Well, yeah, yeah. Like,
that's enough for me. Hire the boat crew.
Yeah. But,
you know, when you think about it that way, it's definitely be a little.
But that was very believable to audiences back then, though, too.
Yeah.
Different storytelling.
But yeah, I like every time we come up and watch one of these, them, you know, we did them. We did the original. Crap. Can't think of, when the pods come up from underneath the earth.
Oh, Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah. Or not Invasion of
Body Snatchers. Oh, War of the Worlds.
War of the Worlds. Yeah. I had to think about it. I was like, wait, what's that? You know, I was like, I know it's not the day the earth stood still. I'm getting the titles mixed up. But anytime we watch one of those films, there's definitely an emphasis on having good characters, a good script, and good acting. And then, you know, yeah, the effects aren't really there like, you know, they would be today, obviously. But because the story's good, I feel like it, you know, a lot of these classics like this, they stand, the test of time, and you can still enjoy them. and they're still, you know, relevant today.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I mean, you know, and it is fun to watch those old ones because it shows you where we've been and where we are now, whether it's mm-hmm. especially with movies and movies we have today would not exist for these films. You know, that's just fact. I think that's a good way to close out The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, an all-time classic monster film, and fit well into our monster theme month, you know, for sure.
I think. Oh, and, easily.
It was a good watch and a fun one. But we're not done yet. Today's episode. You have pop culture ready, right?
Did you remember? I sure do. Oh, yeah. I remember.
Oh, man. I realized. I was like, I forgot to text Matt and remind him, but he remembered.
I did.
Because you just have one job a month on the podcast, you know, unless we do
it. Some research.
So this month in pop culture history for the month of April, I literally had to think for a minute what month we were in. So let's hit it, Matt.
Yeah. So this month, 1979, going back a little ways, Australian film Mad Max.
A little ways. Come on, man. I was born in 76.
George Miller. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, you were 3 years old when Mad Max was released.
And so it was an April release. Huh? Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know why I would think it would have been like a summer film or something, but it was an independent Australian film. So it probably had a, you know, a weird release date because, you know, back then April for a movie was probably, you know, an ultimately not good. But, you know, we all know it turned out okay. Mad Max found a home in American audiences. It played well on television here and things like that. And of course, a couple years later, we got The Road Warrior made. But Mad Max was a relatively successful independent film too. It found it found an audience in theaters.
One of the better dystopian franchises too.
Yeah. It's definitely shows its age as far as budget goes. We've covered it on the show. But it's one of those old movies that the story is so good that it's low budgets and effects are forgiven because it tells a really cool fucking story. Mm-hmm. And it gave the world Mel Gibson at the time for the better. Might have turned out for the worse for some people that aren't fans of him anymore because of some things he said. But you know, we end up getting introduced to Mel, who went on to make more Mad Max films and Lethal Weapon films. And one of my favorite films of all time, Braveheart. So, you know, if Mad Max doesn't come out that April, we might not have had Mel Gibson be the star he was.
That's true. So this person is going to be at Comic Palooza. And she's having some health trouble right now, but Shannon Daughtry, 53rd birthday today, April 12th. She is 53.
Happy birthday to
Mallrats. Yeah. Mallrats.
I noticed she's not, there's no autographs at the table for a Comic Palooza. You have to pre-order them because, you know, I'm sure she's with her cancer treatments too much for her at the table.
Yeah.
So it's more just a meet and greet at the table from looks over for fans. And, but all the best wishes to her. You know, I know she's, may not make it through this year, unfortunately, you know, but, hopefully she makes it to Comic Palooza and gets in some fans and that's the way to be though. Just keep on living your life till last minute. And that's what she's doing, you know?
Yeah. And honestly, she was always my favorite Charmed witch. You know, you always watch Charmed whenever, you know, I was younger. And, you know, I felt like a lot of us did because, you know, they're pushing Phoebe.
I never watched it.
You know, they were putting Alyssa Milano in those skimpy shirts.
I know what it was. I just never watched it.
Yeah. But she had like the telekinetic powers. She was the badass, you know. It's like, you know, the other one could, you know, Holly Combs could freeze and the other just, you know, had premonitions, but she could like, you know, shove you into shit. You know, she was cool. So wish her the best. Hopefully you get to see her. We reviewed a monster film last year that featured Shirley Temple. And in this month, 1934, she appeared in her first feature length film, Stand Up and Cheer. And she stands out to me because when my sister was little, she resembled Shirley Temple a lot. So,
what monster film did we do that has Shirley Temple in it?
Shape of Water. She's watching the Shirley Temple.
She's not in the movie. She's on the TV. Okay.
Yeah, she's on the TV. I was like, sorry. Wait a minute. So I should clarify.
I was like, wait, I don't remember ever doing a Shirley Temple movie. I mean, I know who Shirley Temple was, but
it's on the bucket list.
I mean, okay, cool. I mean, I don't have much to say on that. pop culture thing there.
1971. This is a big pop culture thing, because it's been played out in, you know, different movies in different ways. And that's, the murder of Sharon Tate. You know, Charles Manson was sentenced to life in prison in 1971, on this day, in April of 1971.
She was on her way to be a huge star. I mean, she ended up being a star in her own right. And unfortunately ran into, Manson and his people. What a terrible, evil dude. You know, and it's like you said, her story's been told many times in different Hollywood versions, and deserves to be told, you know, because she, her and her family deserve that. And,
yeah,
you know, just a horrifying manner and what things that occurred with that family. And, man, you know, I've read some things about the Manson case before, and just truly, that dude's, I mean, evil personified. I mean, there's just no way to describe him and his family.
Oh, yeah.
Or his followers. I shouldn't say his family. They call it the Manson family, but it's his followers, you know, and just sick, a sick, sick person that could manipulate people into that way to turn into what he is. And whether people believe that he ever killed anyone or not, because people believe how much blood he actually have on his hands, the other people do it, he still did it. He was the one that ring led all those people.
Exactly. You and, don't have him.
He passed away, didn't he?
He passed away jail a few years ago.
Not that long ago. And he was defiant to the end. He would go to his parole hearings and just evil, man. That's all he was, just evil. And unfortunately, he took Sharon Tate from this world for people.
Yeah. Bad dude, to say the least. So a little lighter and a little bit more recent. 2012. People magazine named Eva Mendez as one of 2012's most beautiful at every age. And I have to say, yeah, she's definitely like a Selma Hayek type.
I mean, she's not, you know? She's not a Selma Hayek, but she's still good looking. That's what I was going to say.
Maybe a notch below.
We can agree to disagree there. I mean, Selma is like her own fucking level, Matt. She's like, there's the Selma level. There's no one else.
There's no one else up there.
Salma and Margot Robbie, they're right up there. They're their own level. Everyone else.
There we go. You know. Does Jennifer Aniston join that club?
She's probably even below them.
Oh, dang. 1993. So we'll go back a little over 30 years. And an action TV series, you may have heard about it, you may have not, opens up with the eyes of the Ranger are upon you. And that is Walker, Texas Ranger, starring Chuck Norris. He debuts on CBS in 93, April. The great Chuck Norris.
Yeah. You know, I mean, Chuck, you know, he didn't even have to use sunglasses to look at the eclipse the other day because he created the eclipse, you know,
that's right.
Wasn't that a disappointment in Texas, man? Wyatt comes home. He's like, Dad, that was so dumb. We couldn't even see nothing because it was cloudy.
Yeah,
I know.
We could see it, and then it would go away. And then you see it for like 2 seconds, and it'd go away. And I'm just like, this sucks.
But, man, I still, speaking of Compalooza, we stood in a room with Chuck, and we lived to tell about it.
Hell yeah, dude.
That was great. It's still one of my favorite panels of all time. Just listening to the absolute fucking legend speak was amazing.
Just him talk about his life and about Bruce and stuff like that. And, I like whenever he was asked by someone in the audience. He's like, "Hey, in the Way of the Dragon, Bruce tears your chest hair off. Was that really your chest hair?" And he's like, "No." He's like, "But if it was, there would have really been a fight to the death there."
Yeah, I remember that scene. Man, just an absolute legend and a truly, truly nice person. Man, everyone that's ever met Chuck says that he's just. He takes the time to talk to people. He never seems bothered if you ask him for a picture or anything like that. They just say he's a really nice person.
Yeah, man. And he sells the Total Gym.
That's true.
You remember those? Yeah.
And then his wife. COVID killed his water company, though, which sucks.
Yeah, that did. Yeah. He was just barely coming out with it, too.
Yeah.
So going on, 1997. I did not know this happened in 97. Ashes of psychologist and author, Star Trek creator, Gene Roddenberry, launched in a space orbit. I guess he was cremated. His ashes mm-hmm. were put into orbit.
I think if I'm right, he was one of the first people to have that done.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, that's kind of cool. I know it's sad that he died, but I was like, wow, that's a pretty cool tribute.
Yeah. I mean, what better tribute for the guy that took us to the stars and created these amazing characters that are still relevant, you know, almost 60 years later, you know?
Yeah.
Is it gotta be coming up on 60 years? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's gotta be past 60 by now. So it was 1961 or 62. We'll start. Yeah. Let me see.
I believe so.
I got IMDb pulled up right here. 1966. So we're coming up on the 60th anniversary in a few years of Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
We're a couple years away from it.
And then fast forward to 2013, Star Trek Into Darkness, directed by J.J. Abrams, starring Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, premieres in Sydney. And that's probably my favorite of the J.J. Abrams films.
Fair. I like the first one better. I think I like the first one better just because Eric Bana's villainous. I really like Bana in that role.
Yeah.
But I like to say, I like them both, actually. It's hard to like, but I think I like the first one a little bit more. I think it's hard to top that scene where Spock comes out of space and saves him at the last minute, you know, and he destroys the antimatter or dark matter, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And it's just so cool because it's just one of those cheering moments when he comes out of warp speed and you're like, all right, you know, and Into Darkness doesn't have that moment, you know, and I think that's what's cool about it. But I like them both. There's talk that a fourth one, that they're trying really hard to get all the actors together and make one more. That was one of the things Paramount said at their CineCon presentation, that they're looking at really hard to make Star Trek 4 happen with that cast. So we'll see.
Hopefully they can do it, man. Hopefully they can do it.
I'm getting the sense that they're realizing they need to sign the actors, have them clear their schedules, and say, this is when we're going to do it. Because I think they kept trying to do it while the actors are busy. Obviously, Chris Pine's been busy. Zoe Saldana's been busy. And say, look, we're going to start shooting January 2025. Be ready. And maybe that's what they're doing. Because Saldana's busy filming Avatar films.
So
maybe we'll get to that point and it'll finally happen. So we'll see.
And so this leads me back to 1954. So lastly, 1954, we're going back again. Seven Samurai, directed by Akira Kurosawa, starring Toshiro Mifune, is released.
One of the absolute most influential films of all time. And we will be doing that movie actually pretty soon. Great movie. I mean, spectacular movie.
7 years of that as well.
A really good deep one to talk about and have fun discussing it. In here in a few weeks. Cool. Good stuff, man. Good job as always to Matt.
Thanks,
bringing
man.
The pop culture for the month of April. All right. Next week, we've got another monster movie for you. We're not going to say it's our final monster movie because we might do one the next week because we don't have that week planned yet. So we'll see, but it could be our final monster movie. And we are going to go back, man. This movie I've only seen once. I don't recall a lot of it. I feel like I liked it, but I feel like I also just didn't retain it real well. But it's directed by Frank Darabont, you know, who made the classic Shawshank Redemption and The Green Mile. And he comes in to direct Thomas Jane and quite a good cast in a Stephen King adaptation. And that is The Mist.
Now listen, everybody. We are experiencing some kind of disaster.
No, it's the end of days. Oh my God.
Something in the mist! Shut the doors! Shut the doors!
I don't know whether it's man-made or natural, but I do know that it's definitely not supernatural.
Nobody else heard that sound?
What sound?
I don't know.
Like something was like pressing against the door.
But the only way we're going to help ourselves is to seek rescue. We're going out.
T-
tie this around your waist?
Or four?
It'll let us know you got at least 300 feet.
There's nothing out there. Nothing in the mist.
What if you're wrong?
Then I guess the joke would be on me.
To take sides, the saved and the damned. Read the good book. It calls for blood.
Think something got in?
Guys, I hear something.
Don't you know the truth? We are being punished.
You try it. We have to get out of here.
Who knows how far this mist has spread?
It could be the whole world, for all we know. Wouldn't make us any less dead.
Daddy, don't go.
If something happens, cut and run.
You can't go out. I won't allow it.
Won't allow it?
It was them! Brung down the final wrath upon us!
We want the boar!
That's what brung down the wrath of God!
I remember the terrifying insects in this film attacking people as they're trying to escape the mist. That's kind of like my vague memory of it. And I just don't know why I didn't retain this film. I know I've seen it. So it's almost going to be one of like a first watch for me, even though I know I've seen the movie. Because I want to say I've seen it like more than once, but I don't know why I'm having a hard time retaining it. But sometimes you'll do that. You know, you watch movies and you're like, oh, that was good. And then you're like, just escapes your mind. Like, you know, like a perfect example of that is like Van Damme's Bloodsport. Okay. I know I've seen Bloodsport. I remember the leg breaking, all the scenes, but I couldn't tell you what the basic plot of Bloodsport is. I just didn't retain it. I couldn't remember.
The Kumite.
Some movies are like that.
His friend dies, who they both trained under.
I didn't need the whole plot, Matt. I was just saying.
Yeah. Frank Dukes. It's based on a true story, man. Come on. He had a fast round kick.
But you know, so next week we will be talking the adaptation of Stephen King's The Mist. Looking forward to it. Should be good. Unfortunately, it's only on Amazon's free streaming service right now, so you have to watch it with commercials, which is always
freebie.
Fine. But you know, and Freevee is the worst. I know it's free, it's from Amazon, but it has more commercials than any other free apps. It feels like 10 minutes commercial. It's like, good Lord.
Really does.
But we'll make it through. Until then, the rebelradiopodcast.com, as I said earlier in the show, for all your Rebel Radio needs. And we thank you as always for listening and appreciate your support. And until next time, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Remember, as always, just go there and do it.
Just go there and do it.